When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
Hey, I'm Andrew Bowser.
And I'm Sapphire Sandalo.
And welcome to Alter Weekly.
Coming up on the show, we talk about the 2001 classic, 13 Ghosts, and why Bowser hates it and why I love it. Then we talk with the real queen of horror, Zena Dixon, about the oft-forgotten 1987 slasher Open House.
But first, let's have a little check-in with each other, Sapphire.
Sure.
How are you doing this week?
I'm doing okay.
Okay.
Got my blood pressure pretty good, so I'm happy about that.
Okay. I didn't know what you were going to talk about, but blood pressure, that's good. That's something to get under control. Yeah. I wouldn't know what my blood pressure is these days.
You should take it.
Yeah, I should.
It's probably high.
It's probably high. It's probably high.
Because you've been
I've been pretty stressed. Well, it's a weird zone to be in. I'm both excited and stressed. And it's because of this Kickstarter that I launched about 3 weeks ago now. Yeah, for a feature featuring my weird character, Onyx the Fortuitous. And it really blends my love of 80s horror into my comedic persona and perspective that I've built with Onyx. And it is exciting. And I'm so excited. And when I wrote the script, I was nothing but excited. But then, you know, the reality of trying to raise this money is, there's nothing to say other than it is a reality. It's a reality, you know, it's not a fantasy. It's not like launch and then money just gets dumped on you. It's not as simple as that. You'd think it would be. It's just a lot of work day in and day out, figuring out what amount of content output from me actually leads to new backers and then what I have the capacity to put out there, you know. How many TikToks can I shoot? How many YouTube videos can I make? How many podcasts can I try to guest on? And you're constantly just doing math. Okay, what did that lead to? That led to this. And you don't want to be too pushy, but you also have to have a sense of urgency, or else everyone's just like, oh, he's got it. Or, you know, I'll give it a little bit. So it's interesting. It's definitely it's just more than I expected. The day-to-day.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, that's totally understandable. I feel like that's your life motto.
This was more than I expected. Maybe I did have a bit of a dream that Onyx had kind of permeated enough corners of the internet over the years that just the announcement of this campaign would be enough to kind of draw out the fans. And it's honestly, it's going well. I don't mean to sound negative, because it is going well. We have hit our marks pretty much daily. And at the time of this recording, we're at about 186,000. We need to be we need to be at about 250 by March 9th.
Okay.
But you know, the further you get in, you're wondering, well, have I tapped all of my community though? Is it going to kind of slow down and slow down until it grinds to a halt?
You think it's hard to stay positive?
Yeah. You would think someone who's like, I raised $186,000 in 3 weeks would have no problem staying positive. But yes, right. For someone like me, I'm like, oh yeah, no, that's great. That's great. But we got to be at 250 by March 9th or it was all for nothing. And guess what? If you don't get to 500 right. by April 2nd, you're a big joke. Yeah. I mean, I only see the possibility of that negative turn. And which is just being negative. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I believe that the friction of constantly feeling the threat of the negative is what actually maybe propels me. So if I hear somebody say, dude, that's great. You raised 186 so far. I'm like, well, yeah, it's only great if we get to 500. So, you know what I mean? I have to feel that friction.
I see that. You know, it's so interesting that you might, I don't know. I think you'd see why I'm saying this. But there was something that I learned pretty recently about how people can interact with spirits. And you can't, I know that sounds like totally random, but I swear it's not.
I love that where this, I mean, I don't know where this is going, but I love that I don't know where this is going.
Okay, good. So when people can interact with spirits, they are at the same vibrational level as those spirits. And so spirits, like, they're not really good or bad. They're just like higher or lower. And so lower vibrational spirits are the quote unquote demons, the stuff that like sucks your energy, the stuff that like keeps you down. And the things that lower your vibrations are things like anxiety, stress, anger, stuff like that. But the things that raise your vibration to the point where you can interact with like really cool chill spirits is meditating, being positive, as like lame as that sounds, but like there is some truth in it. And so the way that I see this, and because I know that you've said people are telling you to stay positive, and that's so annoying when you know the reality is like, okay, if I am celebrating this win, it's not going to matter if I don't like achieve the actual thing I'm trying to achieve. But it does help, because I think by raising your vibration, you're going to attract all the people who are excited too. And it's going to make other people excited too. And then they're going to want to contribute, as opposed to, you know, being like almost too realistic about it. Cause like, yes, there's a chance to feel everything.
Yeah.
But you know, what will push you is by, I don't know, raising that vibration.
you're so right. I have felt that even so far. But I don't have the language for it because I just don't think about it that way. But like, I did a live stream last week on my YouTube channel where I just talked about the other characters in the script, and I was so stoked. Just like, I was having so much fun, and we had had a really good day when it came to the fundraising. And we'd hit our mark for that Friday. So that night when I did a live stream, I was just in a good spot. And I think that video then raised another few thousand as it was kind of archived on my YouTube channel. And it was me just like being in the pocket of having fucking fun. And the whole reason I wrote the script was to just have fun. Like,
You know,
Onyx makes me laugh. Sending him into this weird horror movie concept made me laugh. I had a blast writing it, and that is where I kind of need to stay. It's true, and I've felt that. I kind of revert to, well, you can't feel too good, you got to pour some vinegar in that, you know. And
if you're gonna be miserable the whole time, then it's extra annoying.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, well, you know what, going into this weekend and next week, I'm going to try to stay in that pocket of fun and just celebrate the little victories along the way. Talk more about the script and why I get like actual joy from it, and not focus so much on whether or not we're going to meet every goal and at what point.
Right.
And and how failure is always just around the bend. I won't think of any of that.
What's the website?
Oh, God. It's Onyx the Movie. .com Newsflash. All right, it's time for your newsflash. Katie Siegel is headed back to Netflix with Hypnotic. Now, you may know her from Mike Flanagan's shows like The Haunting of Hill House or The Haunting of Bly Manor or the upcoming Midnight Mass. Well, the upcoming movie Hypnotic was announced by Variety. It also includes Jason O'Mara and Dulé Hill. It's about a young woman seeking self-improvement who enlists the help of a renowned hypnotist. But after a handful of intense sessions, she soon discovers unexpected and deadly consequences. Matt Angel and Suzanne Coote of The Open House are directing. Silent Night, Deadly Night is coming back with a brand new movie. Deadline reports that the new take on the franchise is coming courtesy of Orwo Studios and Black Hanger Studios. Scott Schneid and Dennis Whitehead, who produced the original Silent Night, Deadly Night, are back on board for Wonder Wheel Entertainment, along with producer Anthony Massey of Massey Media. There's no word yet on the approach for this reboot or the creative team involved, but stay tuned. I'm sure we'll learn more soon. Aisha Tyler is directing a psychological thriller called Silent John that is set in Ireland. It's described as a socially conscious psychological thriller that explores the unholy fanaticism of a man lost in the chasm between faith, the church, and madness. Deadline reports that Aisha Tyler is on board to direct for Hidden Empire Film Group. Tyler says that Silent John is a terrifying portrait of institutional abuse and its lifelong effects on the psyche. Well, sign me up. And that's it. That's your newsflash.
Newsflash.
Welcome to a new segment on Alta Weekly called Love It Slash Hate It, where Bowser and I discuss a film one of us loves and one of us hates. First up, 2001's 13 Ghosts.
I feel like I should tell my experience with the movie first because mine's kind of a bummer. And
great.
Perfect
for the podcast.
Well, what I'm worried about is either I tell my bummer story first, but at least you know that that story exists, or you go first and maybe your story of being introduced to the film is really light and fun. And then I follow up with like, well, guess what? I watched 13 Ghosts. You know what I mean? And then I bring it all down.
Right.
I think it'd be better to know the bummer up top. Okay.
Of course you have a bummer relationship with 13 Ghosts. Of course you do.
I don't even think there's a way you could predict that this is my relationship to 13 Ghosts. But it actually
is tragic. It will make me sad.
Will make you sad. I know. I'm not even kidding
either. Oh my God.
I'm only laughing out of the discomfort that will arise when I tell this story.
Oh no. Okay. Is it going to make me now hate the movie?
No. It's not the movie's fault, but there is a very specific stretch of films that are vividly emblazoned in my memory because they were released right around 9/11, and I was in New York for 9/11.
Whoa.
And attending film school. I don't talk about it often, it's always a weird thing to navigate because it means so many different things to different people. And you realize as you get older, like to younger people, it sometimes doesn't mean much of anything. I mean, it's weird to have already met a generation that kind of jokes about it or it's like you know, even if they know it's a serious thing, but it's already utilized as a punchline to a, you know, for a different
I know
statement.
You
know what I mean? So serious thing out of the way, it was released October of 2001.
Oh, right after.
And here's the thing, I was going to film school, SVA in New York. What wound up happening, and I don't know that a lot of people know this outside of New York, but they opened up movie theaters for people like to go into for free. And not every movie theater, but some chains were like, you know what? We all just need to escape. Like, let's just come on in. I remember specifically the United Artists in Union Square. I think it was just like, come on in. You could just go and sit in the movie theaters all day. So in a weird way, It's in my memory so vividly because we went to see 13 Ghosts the day it came out. And my friends and I in film school were like, really? Are we going to go to see 13 Ghosts? Like, yeah, dude, we got to do something. All that to say, I have a vivid memory of seeing the movie, but you'd think it would have endeared me to the movie because escaping, I remember those weeks and months following and staying in New York and how uncertain and insane things felt. going into a movie theater still felt kind of comfortable and mm-hmm. and homey and just escaping. But somehow I still managed to hate 13 Ghosts because
of course you did.
So for me, stylistically, it's one of those early 2000s horror films that really made me struggle as a horror fan to even stay engaged mm-hmm. in the genre, because it seemed to just have no real mood. Like, shit just starts popping, you know, and it's like they're in a technically in a haunted house, and yet there's really nothing's held. Everything's just like, grah, 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 grah. You know, it's just an assault. And everything is that jittery late 90s, early 2000s music video style of everything's double and triple exposed. It doesn't seem to have any originality. It just has this, like, it's like looking at the denim outfits that Justin and Brittany wore. It's like that to me. It's this, it's this tacky style that I don't even think affected very much outside of that era. Like, I can look at stuff from the 80s and I'm like, yeah, but some of this stuff was really dialed in and actually was good for the genre. But I can't see what in 13 Ghosts was actually good for the genre.
You don't think it contributed anything to the genre?
I've got a couple of takeaways that I like about the movie, but I don't think I should share them yet because,
oh my God,
I dislike too much about it as a whole entity. Like, just it, and a big thing is its early 2000s style.
Right.
It all feels like it feels like the movie is low ride jeans as a movie.
Okay, I could see that.
What do you like about 13 Ghosts? And when did you see it? Did you also see it when it came out, or did you rent it later and it was like, you know, at a sleepover or a party or something? Or,
well, let me tell you, Bowser.
Okay.
So now before I begin, I do want to acknowledge this movie 100% has flaws.
Sure.
I know that it's not perfect.
Sure.
But does this movie fucking rip for me? Yes. So
it was so funny as I rewatched it. I was like, I bet you that's a part that Sapphire like thinks totally rips. Like, I get that there's moments like that, but continue.
I'm curious to know what those parts are.
Yeah.
So first time I ever watched it, actually, let me back up a little bit. So I don't know if I've mentioned this on the show yet, but I've mentioned this to you. My mom, even though she's the one who introduced me to a lot of horror, like The Exorcist, The Fly, Psycho, I watched all of those with her, but I still wasn't allowed to watch like modern R-rated movies because she thought they were too much. So that's where she drew the line. And so
it had
only
to be a classic.
Right.
Yeah.
Where she's like, these, you got to watch these.
Yeah.
But my cousins could do whatever they wanted. So whenever I hung out with my cousins, either at their house or my grandma's house, we always rented horror movies. And I remember my uncle, I'm just remembering this right now. My uncle's friend worked at Blockbuster, so we always got like a really good deal. And like whenever we went with my grandma, she was always like, oh yeah, and I'm Gabriel's friend. I mean, no, I'm Gabriel's mom, not friend. And so he would get us a discount.
That's great.
So we'd always rent a bunch of stuff. And so I remember I first watched 13 Ghosts at my grandma's house because my cousins had actually already seen it and they loved it so much.
That's so funny to me.
They were like, we have to watch this movie. And so like during the movie, they were explaining the backstory of all of the ghosts. And you know how much I love a folklore,
yes,
how I love a backstory.
Yes.
And so I was like, this is so cool. Like, it was just so cool to me.
Yeah. I mean, that's totally what I locked into that I thought you would respond to is, I love the idea that there's this like book, that there are these personalities attached to these entities and they have almost like, they each have almost like a supervillain persona. Mm-hmm. I do think that rips. As I revisited it, because my friend and I that saw it with me back in 2001, we just joked about it. We were like, 13 ghosts, because the 13 is in the middle of the... So we were like, oh, and I don't think, admittedly, I don't think I had respect for, like, I always loved Tony Shalhoub and I loved Matthew Lillard. from SLC Punk and then and Scream, obviously, and even Hackers. But I don't think I had as much respect for the idea that both of those guys were still giving like pretty great performances in 13 Ghosts. Whereas watching it now, I was like, dang, Shalhoub's like really dialed in. And Matthew Lillard's really dialed in. He's doing like his shit like an 11. And I, so I did appreciate that more upon this return viewing. And I knew you'd like I'd forgotten all this stuff. The idea that like the whole house was encased in these spells on the glass. I was like, I bet you Sapphire's like, that's tight.
It okay, the production design of this movie is so cool. They built that's an entire house for this movie and all the walls of glass, and it's got like writing all over the walls. I thought that shit was so, like, to me that was so creative. I'd never seen anything like that.
I mean, that's true. I even felt that watching it again. I was like, why was there so much money spent on this remake? Like, I was watching it thinking, you know, all of that, the mechanics that, to be honest, even though some was like CG, still was pretty convincing. Like a lot of the big gears, my biggest gripe is just outside of the stylistic gripe is that it still just amounts to very little character development for our leads. And then, you know, a string out of kills,
right?
It just kind of boils down to like a string out of kills. When I feel like you got Shalhoub, you got Lillard, I mean, you could probably do, and you got F. Murray Abraham. Mm-hmm. You could do some. I think you could do some. They could have done some cooler shit with the talent that they had.
Sure. I here's the thing.
I'm looking for some kind of like Tony Shalhoub Oscar performance in the middle of 13 Ghosts. I guess I don't know.
Like, this is a movie that, let's see, that came out, what, about around, exactly 20 years ago. This is, I know I'm not, like, a huge person on remakes, but this is a movie I would love to see remade with all of my issues with it taken out. I have issues with it.
Yeah.
Like, one issue is, like, the ghost rules, like, how they can interact with you. I know that it was a little bit inconsistent where like they can interact with you when you don't have the glasses on, or I don't know. There's moments like that where it felt like
I was losing track of that too, that logic.
Yeah. Like,
when does the ghost become a threat? When can it
physically
harm you?
Like, yeah. And that's my problem with a lot of earlier, actually even movies now. That's one of my biggest pet peeves is when you can't really track like when the ghost is a real threat, because then I don't know when to like truly worry for the characters.
Yeah.
But like that aside.
Yeah. Well, I think it's kind of like what I'm learning is like it's the way we're introduced to something is so important, because I'm willing to forgive so many flaws. Like when we talk about some of my favorite 80s movies, and you're like, you liked that movie that was literal garbage? And I'm like, well, I don't even see the garbage as much, because I'm seeing the things I liked about it, and I'm treasuring those a bit more than I am judging the shortcomings. And it's similar with any movie that you're more attached to. It took me watching it again to even like see what was worth taking away and actually valuing in 13 Ghosts. Cause all I remembered was, it was garbage. That's what I remember.
You know, that's so, it is really interesting. And I think that we don't acknowledge that enough when we talk about the media we consume, because when we consume it, our state of mind, when that happens, affects it so much. Like there's movies where I cried that it, in any other time in my life, it probably wouldn't. Like I cried in a Pokemon movie.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Yeah. There was something about that story that hit me in that exact moment. And
for sure.
I don't know. Just like watching that movie at my grandma's house with my cousins, we were just all like so hyped. We're like, yes, this movie's awesome. That's what I remember.
And how fun to, I didn't have the, no one else in my family was into horror films. It was like only my thing once I did get into them. But to get introduced to it by your cousins and for them to like already know that there's 13 ghosts and they're these personalities, the jackal, the juggernaut, I could see that being like enticing and exciting for you as a viewer. Like, oh, wow, this is going to be crazy. You know, this is going to be big.
Yeah.
It would have affected my viewing experience as well. In summation, I still would not be able to say I liked 13 Ghosts. I don't have.
But
to your point about when you take something in or when you digest certain media. Yeah, like there's movies that I cried at and that I can recognize are flawed, but I can't deny what Wreck-It Ralph 2 did for me when I watched it on a plane, probably drunk. You know, I will defend it because of whatever engagement I had with it on an emotional level. So I get that.
Right.
For me, 13 Ghosts, I probably would have had to come in at a different point in my life to truly like it. But I do like the iconography of it. I love the idea of a big fucking book that has these like biographies of.
Yeah.
I love that shit. I love M. Beth Davids, I guess, would she be a paranormal investigator? The one that shows up that's like.
Oh, Kalina.
Yeah.
What did she call herself? She called herself like a
spiritual. Yeah, she had a name, right? Like a title.
Possession something. I forget.
Spiritual love that. I do love that it opens and you're just in it. You know,
it,
like
it just goes right from the beginning. And I love that too.
I do love that. I like F. Murray Abraham. Oh, I mean, you've Ghost Goggles, you know, sign me up. That's
Yeah. I want them.
Yeah, I know. That was great. But it did make it hard to track the logic of when these things were a threat. I was confused about like the adult daughter and young son.
Oh, that casting is weird. I actually,
right?
I picked up on that even the first time I watched it because I legit thought, I was like, wait, is that his wife? Like I got really confused. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a huge age gap and it's very strange. But it's also fine.
Yeah. But it's also fine.
Another reason why I would love to see this remade is that I feel like the strangest thing about this movie is that it has so much lore that isn't discussed in the actual movie. So the stuff that my cousins were telling me was the stuff that was in the special features.
Oh,
on the
wow.
DVD. Yeah, because in the movie, you don't learn the actual backstory of each ghost. They all have names. They all have a story of how they became the ghosts that they were. And it's like, I think I saw a tweet a month or so ago where someone's like, hey, what's a movie that you would love to see as a TV show? And I was like, 13 Ghosts. Every episode would be how Cyrus captured each ghost.
That's true. That is cool. Yeah. That is cool. Yeah. And I do think it's, I would appreciate a TV series or even another film version that's like really brutal. Like it feels like it's just kind of made to be brutal, right? Because these figures are supposed to be so imposing and terrifying that if those glass doors open, you're fucked.
Right.
And which, you know, kind of like the vibes toward the end of Cabin in the Woods when, you know, these creatures are loosed. There's no putting them back in the cage. I think it could be cool to do like a really brutal, not that this one wasn't, because this one was pretty graphic.
Mm-hmm. But considering like there's like this character, Jackal, is supposed to be the most dangerous one, but we never really see it do that much damage.
I know. Yeah.
It captures Kathy. But she's able to escape pretty pretty unscathed. Like she has a couple scratches, it rips her shirt, but like that's kind of it. And I'm like, oh, well, if that's all it does, then
I know. it's always hard to, man, it's hard to pay that stuff off, right? Like in It Follows, it's like, hey, if it touches you, you're dead. But not if it's the main character. If it touches the main character, it just flicks her hair and runs away. But
oh my God.
If it touches you, you know, and you're like, okay, well, if you're going to say something is fucking, it touches you and you're dead, you got to stick to it.
It's got to kill everything it touches.
It's got to kill everything. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's something that happens a lot. I was actually, this is totally unrelated, but I just watched The Host, Bong Joon-ho's.
Yeah.
And like it's killing all these people, but then it takes the daughter to the sewer and she lives. And I was like, why did it have to be this way?
I know. I know. I mean, I still love that movie.
Oh my God, it's so good.
It's so good. But yes, I mean, but that's just goes to show you, even in a movie that fucking precise that I feel like is so taut, there's still logic flaw. There's still, I always try to remind myself of this when I'm writing. I'm like, if you have to be obsessed with logic to a point, but mm-hmm. there is emotion and just kind of like, for lack of a better word, vibe that should carry the audience kind of beyond logic at certain points. Because if you were to like logic pick everything, I mean, even the greatest films of all time would fall apart because, you know, they're not real. They are inventions. Exactly. They are fiction.
That's true. And another tweet that I saw that I'm remembering right now. I'm talking about Twitter a lot. I'm usually not on Twitter. But there was a tweet that was like, hey, movies are just supposed to be like symbolic representation, or characters are supposed to be like representations of ideas. Sometimes they may not like be actual people, but like, I don't know, that I was like, yeah, you're right. Like sometimes things aren't going to make a whole lot of sense, but that's not the entire point of the movie.
Right. They really are like distillations of reality, but they aren't, you know, exact reflections of reality. Right. I just think it's the job of the filmmaker to kind of get you to a place where
feel like it is real.
Yeah. You're just buying in enough to forgive some of the logic flaws.
Right.
Which 13 Ghosts?
I was like, which it did. No,
well, I guess arguably it did for you, and it almost did for me.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
Oh my God, do you hear that? It's time for Better Off Dead. This week, we're joined by the real queen of horror, Zena Dixon, to talk about Open House from 1987. Well, thank you for being here, Zena. We're so excited to have you.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for the invite. Again, thank you.
I feel like we have a very similar like sweet spot for horror. You like a lot of the same 80s stuff that I do.
Yes.
Would you say that's true?
Very true, very true.
And yet the movie that you suggested we discussed today, I'd never seen. Actually, I'd never even heard of.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. Before we dive in to discussing 1987's Open House, for our listeners, why don't you just tell us what you do and what podcast you host and what you do with your YouTube channel, et cetera.
Sure. Hi, everybody. I'm Zena, AKA Real Queen of Horror, or your best friend who loves horror movies, because I have a lot of friends who don't like horror. So I'm their best friend. So I have a website, realqueenofhorror.com. I'm also a co-host of the Bloody Disgusting Weekly podcast, where I kind of give you like movie recommendations, because there's a lot of things to watch. There's a lot of streaming services with more on the way. So I know how hard it is trying to find something in that ever-growing queue. So I just try to make it a little bit easier for you. And with my YouTube channel, I kind of do like list, you know, I'm not really great at doing reviews, or it's not like my favorite thing to do. So because I watch like a ton of movies often, this is also just like a very easy way for me with the list to keep track of them. So it's kind of like, it could be like top scariest teeth or top upcoming scary horror movies of 2021, you know, so different lists like that.
Yeah, definitely. Kind of bite-sized way to digest something common about all the movies. I love it. Well, how's everybody doing tonight? How are you feeling tonight, Zena? Are you doing good? I know it's later where you are.
Oh, I'm feeling good. I'm a night owl. So this is
okay,
like,
good.
It's cool.
So
in your element.
Yeah. why don't you tell us when you first saw this movie or heard about this movie? Was it on TV? Did you rent it? I was a huge Adrienne Barbeau fan, but I completely missed this one.
So I remember always seeing the poster when I was a kid, but I never watched it. You know, I grew up in the 90s, but I never watched it, you know, so it's like, you know, whatever. Years later, I want to say maybe this is like 2011, 2012. I'm minding my own business and I'm on YouTube. And then there's this movie that pops up and it says Open House. I'm like, oh yeah. Okay. And it's the woman from The Fog and, you know, Creepshow.
And you remembered the poster?
Yes. And I remember the poster. So I was like, let me just watch this. Right. I'm so giggly because this movie is so ridiculous.
It really is.
It's so wild.
It is. And I just want to apologize. So the reason why.
Don't apologize. Don't ever apologize for having us watch something this silly.
Okay, because it's like I knew it was ridiculous and I didn't know if you guys, if you've seen it or not, but if you didn't, I'm like, oh man, I'm probably gonna ruin their lives and they're probably never gonna want to talk to me anymore.
No, if anything, I was so glad that you had uncovered another like obscure 80s gem for me, because as I'm watching it, I'm like, I mean, I don't even know how to describe it for people that don't know. It's like, it's kind of about estate agents.
What is it?
Like, it almost feels like, it feels like an episode of like Silk Stockings, if anybody remembers that.
It's like
almost softcore, like, you know, late night,
right?
Late night USA, but then with a slasher, right?
Right. And it's like, okay, in my defense, it was like, all right, so I knew that, like, for some reason, not a lot of people, they don't talk about this movie, which is understandable, but I like it. I have a thing for it. We talked about this, like, 80s cheese. And, you know, around, you know, the end of the 80s, 87, it was kind of like we were kind of like the slasher, you know, genre was kind of ending, you know, before Scream, you know, came back or whatever. So it's just like we already seen it all except for this. And it's just like, hey, that's pretty cool with real estate agents and stuff like that. But the guy who's doing it, it's just like, what is the point of this? There's just so many questions. Like, there's so many. Like, I watched it again today just for a refresher. And it's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
And like, but I love it. But I love it so much. And so like, okay, can I tell you guys about it or should I?
Oh, yeah, please. No, please.
Okay.
Because Sapphire and I were talking about how we had just watched it, but we feel like we didn't see it. It's like... I feel like I need to watch it two more times to get what even happened, because it's really hard to track.
I'm so confused.
Yeah.
It's okay. First you have like, so the opening, there's this guy and I don't remember his name and I feel horrible, but I remember his real name. I think his name's like Jeremy Bottoms, you know, and it's just like, whoa.
Yeah,
right?
the radio host.
Yeah. And so like,
oh, Dr. something.
Yeah, so he's kind of like Dr. Phil helping people solve problems, right? And a girl calls and it's just like she's confessing that she's sleeping with her dad. And it's just like, whoa, you know, it was just so much already. And I'm like, okay. And then spoiler, she ends up killing herself on the air while on the line. So then fast forward, you know, some lady, like she dies and, you know, she's a real estate agent. And then apparently with the detectives, they're like, oh, you know, this is not the first time. They have a whole case open about like this mysterious killer that's going around murdering real estate agents. And it's like, what is happening? So it turns out one of the scenes that just still will forever be in my heart, the scene where the real estate agent, she's showing like this family, like this home, and there's like dog food on the floor, whatever. Yeah. So she's cleaning it up. Then she goes into the bathroom and she just starts screaming for like 60 seconds. And she's sliding down the bathroom wall, screaming because there's a dead body in the tub. There's flies. It says, what was it? Closed or open?
There was something scrawled on the wall, right?
I don't remember.
In blood.
And the camera's so just, like going in and out on her, like, in and out.
Right? And it's just like, it's like, what is happening? Then, okay, fast forward, we find out that it is like this serial killer who giggles named Harry. And Harry is a homeless man and he's upset. Mm-hmm. That, you know, these real estate agents, they're taking away his home because he's homeless and he doesn't have one and he eats dog food.
Yeah.
And, you know, for some reason, he kills somebody with a toilet plunger with razors attached to it. And it's just like that. Yeah. I've never in my whole horror life seen anything like that. And then, so then it's just like, you know, cat mouse. We already know who it is. And it just gets more ridiculous. The music is outrageous. The characters are ridiculous and predictable. And then the killer, he has the longest monologue as to why he did it. And I'm going to be honest with you. When I first watched this movie, because his monologue was that long that I remember that I was actually washing dishes and then I was folding clothes and he was still
going. Yeah.
So you just kind of
black out and he's still going.
Yeah, and then he was still talking and it was ridiculous. And it's like, why is he giggling? There's just so many things. And it's like, I know that it's ridiculous and I'm sorry that I recommended this one, but it was actually between this one and this other movie from 2005 called Ice Queen, you know?
Oh, wow, I've also never heard of that.
I've never heard of that either. It's something.
Who's in Ice Queen?
You know what? I don't know. I've never heard of.
Yeah, it's like one of those kind of no name.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it takes place at like a skiing resort, you know, and it's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it has like cool things, but you know, I love 80s movies and, you know, I just had to watch this one. I had to check it off the list.
Yeah. I mean, that is, you summarized the movie very well. That is what the movie's about. There's a slasher whose iconic weapon is a toilet bowl plunger handle with razor blades.
Because why not?
Yeah, I mean, Sapphire, you're not as much into the 80s stuff as we are. How did you take this in? Were there any elements that you thought were worth taking note of?
You know, there's something so interesting about that very specific time period where this came out in 87, because there were these moments and these lines were like, I felt like they were trying to address certain hot topics in feminism, but in like a really weird way. Like, I don't know if you remember these. I wrote some down, but like when that guy, I don't remember anyone's name, by the way. So like, there was a real estate agent who was doing an open house, and then this guy was basically harassing her. I think it's Lisa who comes in. And then I forget exactly what he says, but he says something like, oh, you're really confident or arrogant or something like that. And she's like, no, I'm just good. And I was like, ooh, I kind of like that.
Yeah.
I don't, just like little moments like that. And I was like, ooh, okay. And then the rest of the movie is just like bonkers.
Yeah. Do you think the movie at any point really says something about the theme of this homeless man being displaced and the real estate the industry kind of taking over? Or does it not really make good on any of those statements? It just amounts to an 80s slasher.
For me, it's just kind of just an 80s slasher. I think that they were trying to do that. I really do. You know, I think that they were also trying to address how like there's a huge problem with people losing their homes and, you know, but they kind of like, it's the music for me, you know, it's like they kind of like missed the mark and like his reasoning behind it. Like we knew who the killer was before like 20 minutes before it was up. And, but it really didn't, it was just like, we're just watching him randomly kill women. And it's like, we really didn't, this sounds horrible, but we had no connection. So we didn't really care.
Yeah,
about some of these people that this was happening to. And I think that they really did try to approach it in like a fun way with the real estate aspect, which it is, but it just didn't work fully.
It almost at times felt to me, there was a movie, let me try to look it up. There was a movie out last year that felt similarly like a soap opera mashed up with a horror film. And let me try to look up what it was called. It was something murder.
It was
about a bunch of like pretty people in a kind of model home getting killed off.
In a model home?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like a model home, like a home that
That was like just you look in it and you say, oh, I want a house like tours. That.
Right.
Oh,
yeah, that's
cool.
What it felt like at least. Let me look up the name of it.
That wasn't open house. Well, there's another open house.
No, it wasn't the modern open house.
Which is terrible, by the way.
It was called Deep Murder.
Ooh.
Deep. Is it good or is it bad?
It's actually about, I enjoyed elements of it. I don't think it fully succeeded in its execution of its concept either, but it was about, I think, actually, like, in a meta sense, I'm having a hard time remembering, but like an actual soft core porn film mixed with a slasher. So there was a moment during Open House where I felt like, did they, you know how like Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 is just kind of a remix of the first one, like even using, I think the director had to use like 70% footage from the original.
Right.
And only shot, you know, 30% of new material. It almost felt like Open House was like a canceled TV show that was just about sexy real estate agents that they were like, oh, well, what are we going to do with this show that didn't air? Give it to a director and turn it into a slasher. And then it's just like, they shot, you know what I mean? It almost felt like
That's exactly what it feels like.
Yeah, like this, like it was retrofitted to be a slasher. If that was what it was, I think it was one of the most brilliant works.
Then it's genius.
Then it's genius.
It is.
If they really pieced it together from like the scraps of an old 80s melodrama.
That's it.
I don't think
so. Yeah, the music got like really sitcom-y sometimes.
Yeah.
It was just like, wait, what is the tone? Like the soundtrack changes from just like weird, like adult phone line commercial to sitcom to, I don't even know. all like, over the place.
Even that sleazy guy who was harassing like the women, he was like another real estate guy, bigger guy. And his music, he had a theme song, you know? Yeah. And it was just kind of like every single time we would see him there, they're playing that song. So it's just like, okay.
It's true. They had, it almost felt like they, which maybe for a low budget thing they did, had to cut the score together out of existing scores or you know, like licensed a music library and just chopped stuff up. Because it would be like, it would be like a music cue from an episode of ALF all of a sudden. And then it would be a horror movie. Yeah, so strange.
Very, very. And just the last thing I wanted to say, I meant to say earlier. So when we finally, you know, the homeless man is with the doctor and he has Lisa and stuff and he wants the TV people to show up, when there's like there's like a fight sequence. And, you know, every single time there's a punch, the music goes up.
Oh,
and it was
yeah.
just kind of, yeah. And it's just kind of like, they're really trying, you know, they're really trying. And like the director, his name is Jag something. I don't remember. It'll come back to me and drive me Jack something. He directed this movie, another one called Hack-O-Lantern. And ooh, that was actually pretty.
Name.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually pretty cool. It's a cool movie. I mean, but it is cheesy, like this one. It's kind of very culty, and you know, cult stuff is kind of my jam.
Yeah. So. Yeah, Jag Mundra.
Mundra, thank you.
Who directed, wow. I mean, there's a there's a lot going on there. There's a movie called Improper Conduct. A lot of them look kind of early 90s softcore. I was going to ask, do you know if the director of this did many other horror films or was responsible for other horror films? They did Tropical Heat, Wild Cactus, L.A.
Oh, my God.
The Other Woman.
Pornos.
Legal Tender, Last Call. Oh, my gosh. And then, yeah,
Hack-O-Lantern. There we go. Just that. I only watched that one. I don't know about the other ones.
Yeah. All right. So, arguably, not a lot about the original film would work for a modern audience. It's steeped in a lot of the tropes of 80s films and even the sounds and sights of campier 80s movies. But if somebody came to you and said, we own Open House, like as a property, what could you do to make Open House relevant for a modern audience? And you could rewrite it from page one, but is there a new way in to this premise? You know, it still has to be Open House 2021.
Yes, yes. Okay, so there's actually a reality show on Netflix, Selling Sunset, and it's about, you know, fancy real estate women, and they're selling like these mansions and $19 million homes, you know, making commission with their fancy purses. Oh, that's what the guy said, with their fancy cars or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, So I feel like it could totally work. All we would have to do is just modernize it. We could keep the same concept where maybe they can be targeting, it could be like a particular company, or it could just be real estate in general. Because I'm thinking that'd be kind of hard to track down every single one. Yeah. So I think that it should be a particular company. And it can be in, you know, I don't know, Los Angeles, New York, you know, just something like that. But it, the killer would have to be different. Like, it's not going to be a homeless person. Like, we need to work that out, like, better. Maybe it could be like someone who was fired years ago and they lost everything, or their parents were, you know, were fired and now they're really cuckoo. You know, that could be a thing. I would prefer that over this random guy with a long monologue. So that's what I think.
Yeah, the studio tells you that's all fine and good, but he has to have the toilet bowl handle, the toilet bowl cleaner handle with the razor blade. That stays in.
Okay, well, then that can be something that he just carries with him, but he never uses it. I would rather him strangle people than use that.
He just happens to have that over his shoulder, though. Sapphire, what do you think? Is there a modern take on open house, or is this better off dead?
You know, I mean, what Zena mentioned with, like, the Selling Sunset thing, people are really fat. Like, it is a conversation happening right now, like, you know, eat the rich and all that kind of stuff. Like, I feel like there's something there. Like, when that part came up in the original movie, when he mentioned, like, oh, you, like, or when he mentioned, like, how all these people are buying these big houses while he's suffering, I'm like, oh, like, I remember my ears perked up. I was like, oh, a message, kind of. And then it just, like, didn't really carry through the rest of the movie. But, like, I felt like it had something. It was trying very not that hard to say something. But I felt like if that could be expanded into a movie, I think it could work. That's definitely something that people are talking about now.
Totally.
It could be called Open House Eat the Rich. That sounds spicy.
Yeah.
You
know? Ultra Weekly just greenlit that idea. Well, Zena, thank you for having this conversation with us. We'll have you back, and we'll just talk about Jagmundra's other films like Night Eyes, Last Call, Legal Tender. We'll do a Jagmundra special with you.
Okay, I'm open to that. Let's do it.
Sapphire's gonna sit that one out. Where can everybody find you on social media so they can stay up to date with what you're doing?
Sure. So I'm always on Twitter, lurking, lovely Zena. And then I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, Real Queen of Horror, also realqueenofhorror.com. And if you don't want to see my face, but you want to hear my voice, the Bloody Disgusting Podcast, new episode every Wednesday.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys so much.
Before we sign off, here's what's coming up on Alter this week. Dogskin on March 5th. A man on the run is haunted by visions of a dog that transforms into a mysterious woman every night. Then Snake Dick on March 8th. Jill's got the snake, Julia's got the flute. Alone, they have nothing. But together, they have a secret weapon to fight the darkness. Then The Chippy on March 10th. A young boy braves a notorious chip shop to find his missing brother. That's all for this week's episode of Alter Weekly. Until next time, stay altered.
If you want to join us next week on the Alter Society, then watch Wrong Turn, the 2021 version. That's what we're going to be discussing. And let us know what you think at the community tab on Watch Alter, and maybe we'll read your comment on the show. You can catch new episodes of Alter Weekly every Thursday. Get it wherever you get your podcasts, and make sure to subscribe and download. Alter Weekly is produced by Andrew Bowser, with theme music by Sapphire Sandalo. Alter Weekly is executive produced by Stephen Michael and Lauren Palmer at Gunpowder and Sky.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.